When Uncle Hammer joined us, freshly shaven and in another suit, the boys and I put on our coats and headed for the door. Uncle Hammer stopped us. "Stacy, that the only coat you got, son?" he asked. Stacy looked down at his faded cotton jacket. Everyone else did, too. The jacket was too small for him, that was obvious. And compared to Little Man's and Christopher John's and mine, it was admittedly in sadder shape. Yet we were all surprised that Uncle Hammer would ask about it, for he knew as well as anyone that Mama had to buy our clothes in shifts, which meant that we each had to wait our turn for new clothes. Stacy looked at Mama, then back at Uncle Hammer. "Yes, sir," he answered. Uncle Hammer stared at him, then waving his hand, ordered, "Take it off." Before Stacy could question why, Uncle Hammer disappeared into the boys' room. Again, Stacy looked at Mama. "You'd better do like he says," she said. Uncle Hammer returned with a long box, store-wrapped in shiny red Christmas paper and a fancy green ribbon. He handed the package to Stacy. "It was supposed to be your Christmas present, but I think I'd better give it to you now. It's cold out there." Gingerly, Stacy took the box and opened it. "A coat!" cried Little Man joyously, clapping his hands. "Wool," Mama said reverently. "Go ahead, Stacy. Try it on." Stacy eagerly slipped on the coat. It was much too big for him, but Mama said that she could take up the sleeves and that he would grow into it in another year. Stacy beamed down at the coat, then up at Uncle Hammer. A year ago, he would have shot into Uncle Hammer's arms and hugged his thanks. But now, at the manly age of 12, he held out his hand, and Uncle Hammer shook it. "Come on, we'd better go," said Mama. The morning was gray as we stepped outside, but the rain had stopped. We followed the path of the bedded rocks that led to the barn, careful not to slip into the mud, and got into the Packard, shining clean and bright from the washing Uncle Hammer and Mr. Morrison had given it after breakfast. Inside the Packard, the world was a wine-colored luxury. The boys and I, in the back, ran our hands over the rich felt seats, tenderly fingered the fancy door handles and window knobs, and peered down amazed at the plush carpet peeping out on either side of the rubber mats. Mr. Morrison, who was not a church-going man, waved goodbye from the barn, and we sped away. As we drove onto the school grounds and parked, the people milling in front of the church turned, staring at the Packard. Then Uncle Hammer stepped from the car and someone cried, "Well, I'll be doggone. It's our Hammer, Hammer Logan." And in a body, the crowd engulfed us. TJ ran up with Mo Turner and Little Willie Wiggins to admire the car. "It's Uncle Hammer's," said Stacy proudly. But before the boys could sufficiently admire the car, Mama and Big Ma shooed us toward the church for the service. It was then that TJ noticed Stacy's new coat. "Uncle Hammer gave it to him," I said. "Ain't it something?" TJ ran his long fingers over the lapels and shrugged. "It's all right, I guess, if you like that sort of thing." "All right," I cried, indignant at his casual reaction to the coat. "Boy, that's the finest coat you ever did lay eyes on, and you know it." TJ sighed. "Like I said, it's all right, if you like looking like a fat preacher." Then he and Little Willie and Mo laughed and went on ahead. Stacy looked down at the coat with its long sleeves and wide shoulders. His smile faded. "He don't know what he's talking about," I said. "He's just jealous, that's all."
"I know it," snapped Stacy sourly.
As we slid into the pew in front of TJ, TJ whispered,
"Here comes the preacher,"
then leaned forward and said snidely,
"How do you do, Reverend Logan?"
Stacy turned on TJ, but I poked him hard. "Mama's looking," I whispered. and he turned back around. After church, as TJ and the others looked longingly at the car, Mama said, "Stacy, maybe TJ wants to ride." Before Stacy could reply, I spoke up hurriedly. "No, ma'am, Mama. He got something else he gotta do." Then under my breath, so that I wouldn't be guilty of a lie, I added, "He gotta walk home like he always do."
"That'll teach him," whispered little man.
"Yeah," agreed Christopher John. But Stacy sulked by the window and said nothing. The sun was out now, and Uncle Hammer suggested that we take a real ride before going home. He drove us the full 22 miles up to Strawberry by way of the Jackson Road, one of two roads leading to the town. But Mama and Big Ma objected so much to going through Strawberry that he turned the big car around and headed back toward home, taking the old soldiers' road. Supposedly, rebel soldiers had once marched up the road and across Soldiers' Bridge to keep the town from falling into the hands of the Yankee army, but I have my doubts about that. After all, who in his right mind would want to capture Strawberry, or defend it either, for that matter? The road was hilly and curving, and as we sped over it, scattered roadstones hit sharply against the car's underbelly, and the dust swelled up in rolls of billowing clouds behind us. Little man, Christopher John, and I shrieked with delight each time the car climbed a hill and dropped suddenly downward, fluttering our stomachs. Eventually, the road intersected with the Jefferson Davis School Road. Uncle Hammer stopped the car at the intersection, and leaning his right arm heavily over the steering wheel, motioned languidly at the Wallace store.
"Got me a good mind to burn that place out," he said.
"Hammer, hush that kind of talk," ordered Big Ma, her eyes growing wide. "Me and John Henry and David grew up together, and John Henry and me even fought in their war together. What good was it? A black man's life ain't worth the life of a cow fly down here."
"I know that, son. But that kind of talk gets you hung, and you know it."
Mama touched Uncle Hammer's arm.
"There might be another way, Hammer. Like I told you. Now don't go do something foolish. Wait for David. Talk to him."
Uncle Hammer looked glassy-eyed at the store, then sighed, and eased the Packard across the road toward Soldiers' Bridge. We were taking the long way home. Soldiers' Bridge was built before the Civil War. It was spindly and wooden, and each time I had to cross it, I held my breath until I was safely on the other side. Only one vehicle could cross at a time, and whoever was on the bridge first was supposed to have the right of way, although it didn't always work that way. More than once, when I had been in the wagon with Mama or Big Ma, we had had to back off the bridge when a white family started across after we were already on it. As the bridge came into view, the other side of the river was clearly visible, and it was obvious to everyone that an old Model T truck, overflowing with red-headed children, had reached the bridge first and was about to cross. But suddenly, Uncle Hammer gassed the Packard and sped onto the creaking structure. The driver of the truck stopped, and for no more than a second hesitated on the bridge, then without a single honk of protest, backed off so that we could pass.
"Hammer," Big Ma cried. "They think you're Mr. Granger."
"Well, now, won't they be surprised when we reach the other side?" said Uncle Hammer.
As we came off the bridge, we could see the Wallaces, all three of them, Dewberry, Thurston, and Caleb, touch their hats respectfully, then immediately freeze as they saw who we were. Uncle Hammer, straight-faced and totally calm, touched the brim of his own hat in polite response, and without a backward glance sped away, leaving the Wallaces gaping silently after us.
"Stacy, Christopher John, little man, and I laughed, but Mama's cold glance made us stop.
"You shouldn't have done that, Hammer," she said quietly. "The opportunity, dear sister, was too much to resist."
But one day we'll have to pay for it, believe me, she said. One day we'll pay.